Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chumi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Chumi from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Business and Economic Segment with me, David Chumi. It's the first edition of Business and Economic Segment of 2026. And we are very excited. We are very excited to be back here at this platform, especially when we speak about money, we speak about finance, we speak about trade and everything that affect the issue of bread and butter. We look at geopolitics and also to say, where have we been? What have we done? Where are we going moving forward? It's the 8th of January, 2026. It's a new beginning. Although the year started with various events, particularly some of these events, never happened in the history of geopolitics. And we look forward, we look ahead. And where are you finding yourself this time? And where are you finding yourself? Are you on your way back home from work? Are you already at home? Are you having some cold drinks outside? You are planning to return back to work? Are you working extra shift or additional shift so that you can meet your needs? And we speak about going back to school. Speak about going back to school. Somebody have said this is a month away. The fight starts, particularly between those who support and those who are expected to support the children. And just an advice to say, if you have a kid, there is no kid which is accident. You must be able to know that the fact that the person is alive, you must be able to support that person. And as a parent, you are not doing your kid a favor to support him or her. It's your responsibility. And if you are able, please support them. They are going back to school. Those are your future ministers, future doctors, future business person, and future sport personalities. Make sure that you support them from the bottom of your heart and make their education system or their education, easier. So, the platform of Business and Economic Segment, today we are going to look at Kavango region, what is happening in that side of Kavango, east and west, especially when we are dealing with issues of issues of food security. When we are going to be in the conversation with my colleague, that is of course Anacleta Haikera, and with Anacleta Haikera we are going to engage, especially when she took a visit. That is part of her field work. When she took a visit, that is part of her.
When life gives you an unexpected breakdown, take control with Express Credit. Borrow $3,000 to $32,000. Same day loan approval. Call 081-9500-500 for more information.
Work when she took a visit. That is part of her, field work to go into, Kavango East and West and speak to subsistence farmers, especially in their readiness and their preparedness toward the year 2026. What are some of the common challenges that they are facing? And we are going right into it and looking at that aspect. So stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 1900 hours and stay tuned. Yeah, just before we go to the main conversation for today, there are things which are happening in geopolitics, especially regarding what is happening when it comes to Nicolas Maduro. They are calling him Nicolas Maduro. That is from the president of Venezuela, who is arrested, and also his wife arrested by the U.S. government. And I was looking at the recent report released by Foreign Direct Investment Intelligence report. Foreign Direct Investment Intelligence, which is conducting market analysis and also looking at some of the development, then you'll be able to start understanding that when it comes to issues of political interference, when it comes to issues of engagement in geopolitics, is now more on it's now more than a geopolitical issue. It's more on state strategic interest to say a country cannot just go to war for the sake of going to war. But a country is going to war, and the country is engaging into dangerous military operations for the sake of securing business interest for its business person and also management of its resources. But looking at this report by Foreign Direct Intelligence, it is a bit shocking, and also to indicate that, you know, although Venezuela is holding around between 17 to 18% of world oil reserves, you know, it has been under pressure for quite some time. And since Maduro get into power, you know, the economy, particularly the foreign direct investment, which is based on oil production, has been under pressure and has been declining between 2012 and 2024. And the statistics are also indicating that, you know, the decline of oil output between 2013 and 2024 is 64%. That is now giving you the country to continue just producing 960,000 barrels per day. And in this regard, some of the reasons given for the decline or for the pressure of the production within the oil sector in Venezuela is, you know, under investment, because remember, Maduro is a leftist and has been following into the footstep of his predecessor, that is Hugo Chavez. And you'll be able also to realize that his policy was focusing on nationalizing the oil sector, but you'll be able to see that there was pressure, especially to foreign companies which are investing in oil. And you'll be able also to see, apart from under investment, one of the things which is stated is also mismanagement, to say, apart from a little investment or declining in foreign direct investment in oil industry, one will also be able to look at mismanagement to say Maduro's government has also a role to play, especially when it's coming to mismanagement in the oil sector. Speak about corruption, and you can also speak about, inability to follow right corporate procedures within the sector. The other thing, which is the main thing, is U.S. sanction. To say U.S. has been sanctioning, Maduro's administration for quite some time. So that's why it's also cornered, Maduro's administration, to the point where the allies of Venezuela automatically became, the threats, or in other words, you can say the enemies also of, the United States of America, that of who United States of America was not cooperating with commercially or trade-wise is who Nicolas Maduro was also cooperating with. You look at Cuba, you look at Russia, you look at China, then you can also be able to see when it comes to that aspect, the arrest of Nicolas Maduro is a blow, especially to other global powers such as Russia and China. And also looking at Cuba, Cuba is going through difficulties, especially when it depends much on oil and gas from Venezuela. But at this point in time, Mr. Donald Trump indicated that he's now in charge. He's now in charge of oil in Venezuela. And United States of America will take control. And they are going to use that oil for the benefit of the United States of America, and indeed also for the benefit of Venezuela. But those are happenings in geopolitics. And you can also see that when you look at the recent directives, especially from the White House, you'll be able to see that Donald Trump has given indication and also directive, especially to the relevant bodies, based on the power vested in him as a president of the United States of America, to say anything which is in contrary with national interest of the United States of America. USA is withdrawing from that. That's why you see various agencies, even United Nations Peace Commission, speak about United Nations Population Fund, speak about alliance, even with European Union, some of the bodies that USA is in, you know, Donald Trump has decided to withdraw from that and also to look at the future of United States of America. It's quite also a news to look into. It's quite a news to look into because it's not only the UN agencies, but also other bodies where he think that America is not benefiting. Speak about Forum of European National High Research Laboratories. Speak about Global Community Engagement Resilience Fund. You speak about, you know, many other international bodies and agencies that USA know is not going to perform. But when you look at the funding of United Nations, you may be able to see that it's only China and United Nations which have been the main funders of United Nations. You speak of United States funding around 22% of the budget and also around 28% of you know, the peacekeeping mission. And without United States of America, it means that the UN must work very fast and address that issue of a model of funding that can allow sustainability. Otherwise, that of which United Nations have been doing will also become a nightmare, and a lot of people will suffer. But that is not the end of the world. Let's see what will happen moving forward, because it's within the prerogative of a president to pronounce and promote national strategic interests. And also, what can we learn as a nation? What can we learn as a nation from what is happening? Because even during chaos, even during difficult situations, there is always an aspect of challenges that can be able to teach you. What can you learn from that? What is the necessity of focusing on your national strategic interest? Is it right to praise everybody when you are not benefiting, particularly in the world of unpredictability? Or is also good to do the calculation and say, this is what Namibia want, and this is what you are not able to compromise? That is what's happening in global affairs. But shortly, we'll be engaging Anakreta Haikera, especially when she is giving us an update on what's happening that side of Kavango East and West, especially the readiness, preparedness, challenges and opportunities of you know, subsistence farmers in the two Kavango regions. And I was looking at one of the studies, an MBA studies in natural resource management from UNAM, and when I was looking at it, is to see Kavango is one of the poorest region, despite the holding more than 50% of more than 50% of green schemes, and also despite having fertile land. And this is really concerned. And I realized to say, no, I need to read deep, especially when it comes to this NBA. But that is one of the things to say. How come it's the most poorest region, despite having opportunities, despite having fertile land, despite having water? What went wrong? But we are looking at 2026 to say what are the new models of farming, and also how are the reactions of farmers that side of Kavango East and West.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I indicated, that I'll be joined by my colleague Anakreta Hikera from that side of Kavango. Speak about Kavango East and West, and she went to the field as always to speak to subsistence farmers and also to look at what is the readiness of subsistence farmers in Kavango East and West, and what are they saying, what are some of the challenges that they are dealing with, and also to look at an overview of 2026. Anakreta Hikela, good evening, and welcome to Business and Economic Segment.
Good evening, David, and to all the Eagle FM listeners.
Let us look at the beginning of the year, especially that side of Kavango. We speak about the two regions, East and West, and it has been known to be, I was actually reading one of the MBA, thesis, which is saying Kavango, East and West, they've been part of some of the poorest regions in Namibia, but they have fertile land, and also you can say it's a land of opportunities. But let us look at what are those who are on the ground saying, especially their readiness when it's coming to food production.
During the festive season, the village newspaper really put an effort in visiting subsistence farmers. Only did we not visit green schemes, but also subsistence farmers.
Okay.
And there were some mixed reactions recorded during the visit by people that are farming. Mm. So local farming is different from green scheme, as we all know. And many people in subsistence farmers respect oxen, or let's say cattle plowing. So now this year is one of the year in the Kavango region that we can say we have been blessed with the rain. Rain started as early as November this year. And many farmers, as we went to the field, you can see that some of them were already harvesting. Some of them were plowing. Many women and children were weeding, and also most of them were actively involved in sowing seeds. And when we talk about Kavango region already, the in brackets, we are talking about a food basket region where people rely more on rain. And when they rely on rain, it means that when rain comes, we grab this opportunity and we want to produce food, nothing but food. And across several parts of the regions, farmers were really observed doing the plowing, which was one of the most important things that I saw on the field, that already around 6 o'clock, people were already in the field plowing. Some were using two oxen, others were using four. And everyone, you can see that everyone has put an impact in doing the work. And then they will work from 6 up to 11 o'clock where they knock off. And then those that were weeding, you find that for some that were weeding, you notice that they will go up to 12 o'clock. But then there are those that are also employed to do the weeding, because some farmers don't have a huge family or an extended family as such. But then these people are also benefiting by being paid a $30 or a $50, which is enough already. Let's say you weed from Monday to Sunday. So definitely get something out of it.
Now, Anakreta, when we are there, let us speak about the transformation in the area of subsistence farming. Looking at the modern tools, you speak about using of ox in plowing. Are you also seeing the change of tools particularly used in modern farming, such as the use of tractors, the use of new technology, or is a continuation of a traditional way of farming at the subsistence level?
Mostly is a continuation of the traditional farming because the farmers themselves complain about the government tractors and the private tractors, where they say that government tractors takes long to come to their rescue and help them plow. But in the meantime, the private tractors are way too expensive. You find in some areas that I went to visit that farmers were asked to pay 650, others 800. And these people are from vulnerable families. They cannot even afford to go to an extent of buying something. But then now you as a private tractor driver or something, you are asking them for 700 or 800, which is just beyond their limit. What I was saying is they prefer just doing it locally, because you find that some people do not have kettles, but then they go and borrow kettles, or maybe they ask for a neighbor to use their oxen, where they are only asked to pay as little as $100. So that is reasonable for them. So the traditional way is the one that is booming right now.
Now, speaking to some of the farmers, apart from now the price of tractors and the continuation of using traditional way of farming, what are other challenges? Are they showing optimism into the year 2026? What are some of the challenges that these farmers continue to face?
Many farmers express optimism that the good rain will lead to increased harvest. And while others also raise concern that heavy rains often comes with insects that could destroy their crops. When we talk about insects, we are talking about the locusts that are also have observed. And they are coming in tiny numbers. And some farmers are already aware of this, a little bit of a traditional way where they have now to focus, just be on their field, look for these small, tiny locusts and try to kill them. But then they were also saying that sometimes it's hard to see the smallest ones that are feeding on the crops. But then when I spoke to the Minister of Agriculture spokesperson, he said that when farmers are going to see that these locusts are perhaps increasing in numbers, they can always call them so that they can provide them with pesticides.
While we are there, let us look at maybe what are some of the main crops that are still relevant, particularly to subsistence farmers, and what some of the new improvement that you can say. Although I've been for quite some time here, there are some new improvement, particularly in terms of the method of farming. Apart from now using traditional way, what are some of the new improvement? Do you see the use of we speak about chemical, nutrients that are being used to boost yield. And we can also speak about new seeds, if there are any.
Normally, the subsistence farmers focus more on mahangu, which is pill millet. And also the other type of mahangu that is called kashana. These are the other small type of mahangu, which are very short. And this one gives birth often. And then we have maize, sorghum, and we have pumpkins, watermelon, beans, and bambara. And remember also, farmers have ventured into also producing nuts, those peanuts. So they actually what they do is they have, as some of them can have a small hectare where they just plant the peanuts. And then what they do is locally they will just fry them and sell them to those that like peanuts. But then there are also those that are trying to see how they can venture into making the peanut butter. So this is one of the most important thing that I've also observed, and when asking them how they want to do or to get to new of these modern ways, mm-hmm. this is one of the things they said, perhaps if they can have more nuts, because the soil is too fertile,
mm-hmm.
where some farmers have noticed what type of crops to plant,
mm-hmm.
and how will it also benefit them in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Not only beans is more important, but they also feel the Bambara nuts and the peanuts are mm-hmm. also important at this stage when the rain is heavy like it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
We went on to ask how some of them have like stored the seeds,
mm-hmm.
and many farmers said they have this traditional storage method called sihete, which is made of mud and such.
Come again?
There is this traditional storage method. It's uh-huh. called sihete.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's made out of thatch
uh-huh.
on the roof uh-huh. and mud uh-huh. in the mid. So uh-huh. they store the mahangu, the beans, and every seed that they have inside that storage.
I hope it's almost the same as our traditional eshisha. It's almost
It's called. That is the exact name. It's also called in your language.
okay.
So there's no difference, really. It's almost the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Because for you, I know some people say it's made out of zinc.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with us, it's more made out of mud.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
which makes it even more important, because we don't really differ from each other.
Yeah.
Family remains the same. You
mm-hmm.
understand?
Mm. Yeah. While we are there, maybe just to look at the demographic, because we see, especially during festive season, we see it has been like a trend to say women and youth are more active in farming and working in the field. And looking mm-hmm. at Kavango East and West, how was the demographic, particularly those who are active in farming? Do you see young people? Do you see a combination of both? What is your observation there?
I will not lie to you. Yeah. In the Kavango East, it's different.
Come again?
In the Kavango East, it's different. Mm. More elderly people are involved in the field.
Yeah.
But in the Kavango West, people are starting from the age of 6 are actively involved in farming.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that these kids do not even sleep past 6 o'clock. They are already awake with their woods and they go after weeding.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was very interesting because perhaps in the Kavango West, people also have these small shebeens and stuff, but the shebeen owners closed until the time of 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
To allow people to plow, to allow people to do their farming before they will even open.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
in the Kavango West, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
So in Kavango West, I can tell you that the youth are more involved into agricultural practices or farming
mm-hmm.
than in the Kavango East. Maybe because Kavango East has a bit of more green skin, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that is one of the reasons
mm-hmm.
why many people, when it comes to subsistence farmers, they are not so much involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe while we are almost closing down, let us look at your observation apart from your challenges, because we see most of the subsistence farmers, they focus more on doing it for the family, and they focus more on doing it with what they have. Maybe if you have to look at your observation, what are you saying are some of the key things that what are the key assistance that these farmers need moving forward, especially utilizing this opportunity of a rainy season and also fertile land? Just maybe two or three key things that you think if the farmers at this region, East and West Kavango, can have this, they can be able to improve their yield.
One thing I noticed is most of the people suffers from wheat. The wheat is, it's way too much in their field.
Mm-hmm.
But then they feel like if there's a machine perhaps that can help them root out the wheat,
mm-hmm.
they will be able to plow more of their land.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to the wheat that has been standing in there, remember that for the past two years, people have not been plowing due to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And the rain was not like it is this year.
Mm-hmm.
So the wheat has grown to an extent where you can just not use a hoe and then it's out already. You mm-hmm. need to use your whole energy to plug it out.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them believe that perhaps if the government can extend and increase the use of tractors and make it cheaper
mm-hmm.
for every farmer to be able to pay for it, perhaps they can go on to large scale, producing on large scale.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one that I also saw is that they also want help with seeds.
Okay.
Now the seeds are becoming scarce. The reason why is for the past years that they have not been producing,
mm-hmm.
These people started consuming these seeds, like mm-hmm. for instance the beans, the maize,
mm-hmm.
and also the mahangu,
mm-hmm.
because they needed millet.
Mm-hmm.
And the beans, they needed something to eat, of course.
Yeah.
So this is one of the thing they also need help with.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the pesticides, you know, many subsistence farmers do not know how to prevent pesticides from coming to their crops. But they need awareness. They also need education at the same time,
mm-hmm.
how they can, if there's something that they need to buy and spray this type of pesticides or insects that are eating up their crops, perhaps maybe they will also know, because they need to be educated on this type of thing and also to get away from the subsistence farmer where they are just too much into local things. They are not into modern, but too much into local.
So
they called out on farmers union to hold more meetings with farmers so that they can just see the way forward, because they need someone to complain to. They need someone to rely on or tell their problems so that they can see how they can make enough food. And Kavango West will not be called one of the region that has people dying from food poisoning or or suffering from poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Anakreta Hakera. Unless you have one more point that you would like to end, especially when it's coming to food security in Namibia, it can be a general point, it can be point related to your observation, especially this time that we are given a beautiful rain, different sides of Namibia.
Just one thing that I've learned from the Ministry of Agriculture.
Yeah.
It was one of the points that was very interesting, where the spokesperson, Simon, said that perhaps the reason why the tractors are not coming on time is because a lot of people are continuously demanding for the tractors to come, and then the tractors are few, but the government is to look into it and see how they can have more tractors to help out with the farmers that are not able to pay the 650 or the 800. And he also said the program operates as a person comes first to book for the tractor. So in that way, maybe farmers should also be aware that at least if I can go to a nearby agricultural office, I can book for the tractor, and it can come as early as November. They can start from even October instead of waiting for November for you to book the tractor. And he also mentioned that there is also challenges that the ministry face sometimes with diesel for shortage. But he said that of all that, they have learned that they will make sure that they put in a request to say from October or November, farmers do need enough diesel in these government tractors so that they can proceed their work, or the work can be done faster. Mm-hmm. And he also mentioned to say that every village has an agricultural development center, mm-hmm. Or a constituency office where farmers can go to and perhaps just give their grievance so that mm-hmm. they can be helped in any way that the government can. Mm-hmm. And he also said that the ministry is calling out for farmers to come forward with complaints, especially for those that have private tractors that are asking them for 800 despite them getting subsidies from the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Nakreta Hakera, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for updating us at the business and economic segment.
All right, thank you, David.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we are continuing with business and economic segment, and that is my colleague, Nakreta Hakera, the Tukavango regions, and she's covering the Tukavango regions and also that side of Zambezi. And she gave us a perspective and also an observation, actually, on what is happening, especially Kavango East and West, on the preparedness and the readiness of farmers when it comes to utilizing this moment of a rainy season and also promoting food production. We are speaking about food production. We are speaking about want to break that record of Namibia being depending more than 50% of the food coming from outside. But you also realize that through giving information, she was able also to give a differentiation between those, say, even if you have two regions, Kavango East and West, there are actually differences in terms of the approach on farming. To say, when you look at Kavango East, for example, she indicated that, you know, as young people from the age of six upward, they do what they can as early as 6 o'clock to make sure that, you know, they participate in farming. And when you look at Kavango East, is more on elders. But one of the things that she has also mentioned is that farmers must be given assistance. Farmers must be given assistance, because although farmers, they work very hard, there is always that challenge of, you know, the challenge of weed, the challenge that you need more than technology, you need more than technology, more than machines that you can be able to use in order for you to plow and also in order for you to promote food security. But interestingly, climate change, although Namibia is contributing less, not even 1% to greenhouse gases around the world, Namibia continued to suffer climate change, and she indicated for the past 2 years that people did not partake effectively in food production. One of the things that she indicated is that farmers, they also need assistance in terms of seeds, because when situation get tough, the seed become also food. That is why I think it's quite very interesting to look at that aspect. Now, the other thing that we are looking at, especially when you look at the readiness of subsistence farmer, is also an issue of young people and also modernizing agriculture sector. Because if you are living into this region and you went to school, you went to university, you are trained in horticulture, you are trained in agriculture science, try and assist your elders in new methods on impacting the yield, impacting the output. Because if you have that capacity, if you have that technical know-how, it's easier for you to contribute, especially when it comes to the issue of, you know, can be using technology in terms of watering, can be using technology in terms of dealing with fertilizers. It can also be value addition, because I like buying peanuts. But I have an understanding that Namibians continue to increase in the production of peanuts. But let us also go beyond that. Let us also go beyond that to make sure that we don't only add that peanuts, but we also make peanut butters. Because at the end of the day, we need value addition. We need agro-processing to the industry that can save us. Because wherever we are, we must be able to know that everything comes from farming. Everything comes from farming. You cannot go forward if you have a weak farming system. You know, I like following international news. I was looking at the main welcoming press briefing from in the United States of America, which contain all part of geopolitics. But one of the things that we can also learn from the U.S. is that then the administration of Trump is also now focusing on organic food, focusing on organic food, real food, not plastic food, not food which high level of GMO. People are speaking about organic food, fresh produce. That is why there is an indication to say the rich in UK, the rich in the Western world, they focus more on eating organic food. Why the rich in Africa, they want to eat the GMO. Instead of you eating Marathon chicken, you have to go and buy this fried chicken with all the ingredients into them, and also with long-term consequences, especially when it comes to you know, long-term health. So that's why it's quite necessary to promote those who are at the grassroots. Because just imagine if you don't have subsistence farmers, what will happen? And also, we must look at a scenario where subsistence farmers advance are supported, because it's quite necessary to look at the positive outcome of the scenario. To say, let's look at the scenario where subsistence farmers are given understandable price of utilization of tractors, price of utilization of tractors. Let's come to the scenario where subsistence farmers are given quality education. Let's come to the scenario where subsistence farmers, they have unions so that they can rely to complain. And let us look at the scenario where councillors, they do not only come to the radio and announce, where food relief programs are, but councillors are directly involved in farming. Councillors are directly involved in coordination of information about farming, coordination of information regarding about qualities of seeds, coordination of information regarding about new methodologies, and also proper planning. Because there is a saying to say, a beggar does not have choices, or much choices. A beggar does not have choices, because if I'm begging in the street and you are asking me, should I give you a white or a brown bread? Should I give you KFC chicken or Marathon chicken? I don't have option. I don't have choices, because I have to get what is there. That's why we're looking at the situation of what has been defined by my colleague Anacreta Haikela, who indicated to say sometimes farmers are concerned about the time that the tractors are coming, and also the congestion in terms of who should be assisted first. But one of the things that was indicated is proper planning is necessary. That is why as early as October, councillors must get involved to say, let us prepare, colleagues, let us prepare on how we are going to deal with this thing of, food insecurity, and how we are going to deal with, planning on who to assist us. And also the issue of private sector. You know, sometimes it's good to use opportunity to make money. But when you are using that opportunity and the same people who are suffering, you are charging them a lot of money, even if you are getting subsidies from the government, is quite one of the things which putting ourselves down as Namibians. Today you are given it, you have a private tractors, and having a private tractor, you also receiving subsidies for you to do your work, but at the same time you are also milking from these people who are trying to make a living. It's quite not a good thing. That's why business people must also be considerate. They must not lose their profit target, but they also must need to be considerate. There are some point where you have to look at the situation on the ground and say, no, this is just maybe a single parent, or maybe it's just a grandmother with her grandchildren, and they are in poverty, but they are fertile land. Use that as part of your corporate social responsibility and give this person a discount, or be considerate and allow a person to assist where he is able to assist. Because at the end of the day, if all Namibians are able to make their own food, we won half of the battle of development. If we are able to produce our own food at our own house, we won half of the battle. If all of us have backyard gardens, we won half of the battle when it's coming to economic development. And yeah, while we are at the beginning of the year, it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting to make sure that opportunity utilization, especially to young people, is prioritized. And let us do the test too, because you can't be just not to be a mahangu producer. Try nuts for 1 year. Try maize for 1 year. Do crop rotation. Do mixed farming. Try new strategies so that you can be able not only to surprise your market, or not only to surprise the land, but also to see what can you do with a different approach when it comes to farming. You know, the discussion of farming is a discussion which must be made attractive. If we have content creators who are making farming attractive, then everybody will be interested into farming. The more we are supporting other content out there, it's also quite interesting now to see that content creators too must play a role. Musicians too must play a role, because everybody must play a role. You know, there was one statement which was stated at one of the international conference by, you know, Tamara Happy Face Kaunda, one of the ladies, and she's a well-known lady from Zambia, and it's related to, I think Kaunda is, or the late KK, is her grandfather, to look into that aspect. Tamara Epiphase Kaunda at one of the conferences stated that, look, we must be able to make agriculture sexy. We must be able to make agriculture sexy. We must be able to make, in fact, to make agriculture attractive. That is what she tried to say. We must make agriculture attractive, because if you look at agriculture, most of the magazines that you see, you just see a poor kid eating maize, or maybe an old woman who is in the field. And you look at agriculture in Africa, and sometimes it's about presenting a posture of poverty. But what is very interesting is that when you have that good content too, when you have that attractiveness too in promotion of agriculture, no one, and I mean nobody, is going to suffer when it comes to food production, and everybody will be interested. So, dear listeners, we are coming to the end of our conversation, especially when it comes to food security, that side of Kavango East and West. And remember, in the tomorrow early morning scoop, the Villager newspaper is going to be out, and we are starting. And tomorrow, make sure that you subscribe, you like the Villager newspaper, so that you will not miss out when it comes to the content of economic affairs, the content of geopolitics, the content of technology, and we'll catch you from there. So I'm going to leave you in the good hands of the Mtuma team, so that you know, we'll be able to look at what they have for us. And Uncle Fly and Kapati.